It's the Hoffman Show, final hour here on the Team 980. You can also listen to us on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn Radio. Final hour of me for the week. Again, I got something I got to tend to, so I'll be out the rest of this week and much of next week as well. You'll be in good hands. Lynnell Willingham, Doc Walker, and the crew will have us covered, so make sure you are locked into them. I don't know whether they do pick six. Anthony, when I'm gone and, like, there's training camp, will you do a pick six at six? Will Doc be diving and bobbing and weaving in and out of sound bites?
I'll probably lead them that way. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, you can look forward to a pick six at six then, which we can get to you right now. We got on and off the field stuff to deal with. Let's hit it.
See, I wasn't even ready, Craig.
You forgot. It's been a long time since we did a pick six at six. Tell you what. Let's skip the intro, because if you can pull up the music at some point, great. But we're short on time and long on things to talk about. So, Phil Mendelson, the D.C. City Council chair, was on Grant and Danny earlier this afternoon. The full interview is worth your time. Search Grant and Danny wherever you get your podcast, and you can listen to that or rewind on the Odyssey app. But Mendelson was asked about where the timeline is, the president's comments, all kinds of stuff. And I thought, for in terms of the president's comments, he first said, like, this is a distraction. I don't know why we're talking about this. But where this becomes actually important, if the president of the United States wants to get involved in this, is, like, can he actually get involved in this? Here is Mendelson's understanding of, like, how seriously we take the president's social media threats, if we want to call them that, relative to what he can actually do about things.
Well, let's see. When we had Audi Field proposal before us, it was 7 months. And when we had the Nationals baseball stadium, if I remember correctly, that was over a year. I'm not saying that we need to take that much time. In fact, I have said repeatedly that we are working as quickly as possible to get to an agreement with the commanders. And I can't emphasize that enough, moving quickly. So the mayor had an announcement at the end of April, but then she took a month to send us the legislation. And when she sent us the legislation, we said, well, can you please give us the economic study that you did so we can understand the economics of this? And it took her another 2-3 weeks to get us that. That has not been the case with the commanders. Everything we've asked for from them, they've been very responsive and very prompt. The mayor forgot to ask for a tax abatement financial analysis. We asked for that. We're getting that, I believe, later this week. The council's, our budget office, has done an economic impact statement, which we will get this week. And just last week, we got the report from our consultant, the Robert Bob Group. These reports are useful to our understanding and the public understanding what the effects are and the benefits of this project, of the stadium. And getting all these reports in less than 2 months, I don't think that's dragging our feet, not even close.
Phil Mendelson, the city council chair, and also my bad on the bad toss there. I told Anthony to run a post and then threw a corner. So it's day one of training camp for everybody. Obviously there he's talking about the timelines compared to Audi Field, compared to Nats Park. And to Mendelson and the council's credit, like, all that stuff is legit. Like, they have moved fairly quickly here, but these things take time. Also, what I think is very evident in listening to Mendelson and listening to Bowser with Keim is these two sides of the city do not like each other, and they will take pot shots and trying to read through the pot shots of, well, the council's dragging their feet. Well, the mayor didn't give us the information. Like, it's very difficult to understand, like, who is telling the truth and how much the truth of that each is telling matters. But ultimately, like, if we're comparing it to the months that it's taken in the past, this process, if it wraps in the next couple of weeks, which Mendelson went out of his way to say the commanders have been outstanding partners and we feel like we're getting very close, they are on track to get what they need to get done. As for the news of the weekend, the president getting involved, here is what Mendelson had to say about that.
I think it's a stretch. Why do I think it's a stretch? First of all, under the Constitution, Congress is who has jurisdiction over the issues involving the district, not the president. Second of all, because the land has been transferred by Congress, so the president would have to go through Congress to undo that. Third of all, the National Capital Planning Commission, if it has a role, that would be sometime in the future, maybe next year, and it would be, I believe, just advisory site plan review. So People have been talking about these levers, but what I think is really going on is it's just a distraction. It's a distraction for the team, a distraction for us, and maybe a distraction for the president as well.
So the one thing I'll say about that is, from my understanding of, like, civics, he's correct. The president can't unilaterally, with an executive action, just undo this lease, although there has been some reporting that maybe he can. But I also don't know how much that matters, because this particular president and this particular Congress, if he says jump, they say how high. And again, like, I'm not here to talk politics of whether that's good, bad, or indifferent, but, like, that's just the facts on the ground as we've seen them, is this Congress, specifically the House, but also the Senate, if the president says, like, jump, they go how high. And if he says, we're undoing this deal, and you've already seen some of his more ardent supporters, like, on social media talking about this, I think they would do that. Is that what Congress should spend its time doing? I talked about that yesterday. I don't particularly think so. On either side of this, whether it was, anything related to D.C., just, like, let us do our thing. But that's the state of play. The one thing that, like, if presidential politics get involved, could the team just be like, we're going to bail, go to Maryland? Maybe. Other than that, is Phil Mendelson worried about Maryland getting involved? Here he is on Grant and Danny.
Well, I don't want to be glib, but I think no. My answer is no. I believe that Governor Moore said a week ago he wasn't interested or wasn't talking to the commanders. But, you know, the commanders would have to start all over again if they were to go somewhere else. And we're pretty far down the road with our discussions. I mean, they reached a tentative agreement with the mayor, and then they've been in negotiations with my office, and we're very, very far down the road. So, no, I think that's interesting but unnecessary speculation. Again, we're moving quickly to try to get to an agreement.
So that's Phil Mendelson. If you want to hear more from him, check out his chat with Grant and Danny earlier today. Just search for that podcast in their feed wherever you get your podcasts. Logan Paulson breaks down what he sees on tape from Von Miller and how it could affect the rest of the Commanders' defensive line at 6:30. More on Adam Peters' thoughts on Von Miller and Dan Quinn's thoughts on Von Miller next in the back half of our Pick 6 at 6. But first, here on the Hoffman Show, the latest from the world of women's sports, presented to you by Wawa. Chicken how you wanna. At Wawa, with customizable roasted and crispy chicken sandwiches. All right, continuing our Pick 6 here on the Hoffman Show. Biggest Commander storylines of the day. The RFK Stadium situation continues to dominate the headlines. Phil Mendelson on Grant and Danny earlier. The other obvious big headline, we spent the first hour plus of our show on it, is Terry McLaurin has not reported to training camp. You want to hear what Adam Peters had to say about that? Go back to the hour one podcast of the show or rewind on the Odyssey app to 4:15, and we played the bites from Adam Peters then. But outside of McLaurin and outside of RFK, the biggest storyline, as we pick up with number four, is Von Miller. He is now in D.C. with the Commanders, signed yesterday, reported the whole deal. I think he's going to speak to the media on Thursday. Tomorrow, of course, a light day. Obviously, the next couple days are a big ramp up. But why Von Miller? Adam Peters has a long history with Miller, and here is what he had to say about the newly signed oldest player on the team, 36-year-old Von Miller.
Yeah, I think just in our conversations with DQ and myself and the staff, we did see, you know, pass rusher is something we still wanted to add throughout the time. During free agency, we looked to add a few guys and didn't work out. So, but we saved some you know, money aside, really, in order to do this and find out the best guy out there. And I've had a lot of history with Von and know the type of person he is. Obviously, his play speaks for himself. And when you turn on the tape from last year, I was like shocked to see how good he still was and how well he got off the ball and just what type of impact he had on the field. And knowing the type of impact he had in the locker room in Denver, and then, you know, getting unsolicited calls from the teams that he's been on since then talking about what a great guy he is, that really made it a really easy decision for us to bring him in. We brought him in a couple weeks ago, or I don't know been a few weeks now, but had a great meeting with him and just knew he was the right guy to bring in. So we were thrilled to have him.
So just real quick, a couple things on that. One, you'll hear more about our thoughts on Miller, the player, coming up at 6:30. Myself and Logan, we both watched some tape. I was pretty impressed with the tape that I watched. Like, he's not Von Miller of 2018, 2019. He's not going to go out and win Defensive Player of the Year, but like, he still has just a really innate know-how of how to do this. And I think that is something this team, I won't say desperately needed, but like, definitely did not have. They were going to have to try to make it work without that. Now they have it, and we'll see what he can do at the age of 36. On the character stuff, he's been a great teammate. That is very different football character, locker room character, than like how you are off the field. Peters was asked about the suspensions and domestic violence incidents that Miller has, and basically gave what I think is a pretty stock answer amongst executives across sports of like, we did our homework, we're comfortable with it. You know, what you hear in the news isn't always the full picture. And I would hope so, because the news reporting around the incident from 2023 for Miller is harrowing and horrifying. What he put his pregnant girlfriend through in assaulting her, what was reported in police reports at the time. Now, she recanted the story and has changed it. And sometimes, like, again, I don't need to go through a whole dissertation on domestic violence. If you're actually interested in that topic, like, I would highly recommend doing some more reading on it. You will learn a lot. And why I think it is easy to scoff at many of these statements often that executives make, and how the patterns develop and the permission structures develop for these incidents to happen and then be brushed aside, especially in the cases of particularly famous men. But they, like, all we can do is say, I hope that is true. I hope that when they looked into this, it was something that got blown out of proportion, that Von Miller hasn't done horrible things to his longtime girlfriend and the mother of his children, and that they're bringing an upstanding citizen into the community. So that is what it is. In terms of who he is in the locker room and what he is going to be around football, I have no doubts that he's awesome. You know, he has been a longtime mentor for a lot of other pass rushers in the league. So there definitely are very positive things to his character. It doesn't wipe away the other stuff. And we just have to hope that Adam Peters and the people that he employs to find out these types of things really are on the nose, that the truth is something that they can live with. And that's not because they're brushing it aside, but because it's different than what the initial reports were a couple of years ago. All right. Moving on, number five in our pick six at six. Miller, 36 years old, not helping the fact that the Commanders were one of the oldest teams in the league. In fact, that made them, locked them in as the oldest team in the league. Snap adjusted, before the Miller signing, they were like fourth or fifth in terms of you project the ages of players to play times their snap numbers. But still, definitely on the older side. So, Adam Peters, why'd you build an old team?
I'm sure there's a ton of factors that go into that, and there are a ton of factors that go into that. But, you know, I think really, you know, signing guys like you know, Bobby or Zach, those guys, I think we showed last year, you know, people thought we brought them in to be like coaches on the field, but certainly they are. They pass along a ton of knowledge, not just to the guys in their position group, but to guys across the whole defense or the offense. And Bobby and Jaden have a great relationship too, understanding and making each other better. But we saw with those guys, they're still really, really good players. And that goes the same for a guy like Vaughn. He's older, but he's still got a lot in the tank. So we're going to look for great players that fit us. And whether they're 22 or 35, if they can help us win, we're gonna bring them in.
You know, he was asked earlier in the press conference about like being win now, and I thought it was a good job by whoever asked the question. It was basically like, I know, I'm sure you hate this because you're trying to win every year. But Adam was basically like, yeah, we're just trying to win football games. Like, that is the point. That's why we're here. We hope the I don't know about a window. The window is open as long as we're here. Like, that's what we want. And the fact that they're able to accomplish that in year one, okay, cool. And I think the thing that's pretty magical about the way that they've done this is they haven't affected their long-term flexibility at all. They are still set up years from now to have a ton of ability to maneuver in free agency, acquire players via trade, etc. And then, obviously, I think the other thing that has to happen is you have to reacquire some draft picks, and you have to hit on a very high percentage of your draft picks. That's always how you have to build in the NFL. So definitely interesting stuff from Peters there. Last but not least, Dan Quinn, on what is actually the most important thing. Look, nothing else matters for the Commanders unless Jaden Daniels is at least as good as he was last year. You can be a lot better in a lot of other places, and if he regresses in a major way, then you're not going to be a double-digit win football team that's fighting for the playoffs. He is the key to everything. And that's a good thing because of who he is and the way that he works. Just ask his head coach.
I think more growth. And one thing I've learned over the year from Jaden, and there's no limits on him, you know, because this is somebody that absolutely is a savage from a work standpoint and just absolutely puts it in. So the skill work, the techniques, the knowledge of the offense, all of those things are going to be enhanced. And he's thrown himself an excellent offseason. We had a good conversation on the phone just the other night, chopping it up about the team, the summer, the offseason. And you can feel his energy. And just walking out here, you know, when you walk into our building, there's a lot of energy with our team. And he's right in the middle of all that. But I would never count him out or, you know, put him, mistake him for not doing anything other than absolutely emptying the tank to go for it.
Anthony, would you describe me as a savage in terms of my work ethic?
Yes, actually.
Oh, you would? Okay, good. I wasn't fishing for compliments. I was really fishing for a punchline to make a joke here, but I'll take that. That's all I need. I would like one day my boss or my coworkers to be like, that dude's a savage in terms of his work ethic. That's a high compliment. Especially in the world of professional football where there's a lot of dudes who work really hard. That's who you want to follow, is that guy.
He is.
Yeah. I think that is well documented at this point. Did you know he shows up at like 5:30 in the morning? All right. Yeah. So that's our pick six at six. Biggest, most important sound bites. You'll continue to hear those throughout the week, guided expertly by Linnell and Doc as training camp officially opens practice tomorrow out in Ashburn. When we get back, Von Miller, what do we expect based off the tape that we watched of him in Buffalo? Me, Logan, tell you next on the Team 980. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. Take Command, you can find it in all of those places as well. Logan and I did a full season preview, but we started the show diving in on Von Miller. It was our first chance to talk about the signing. And one thing that I think is worth noting is that Von Miller was listed as an outside linebacker. That is the exact same designation that Dante Fowler got last year. Not a defensive end, outside linebacker. And that might influence, a hint to how they plan on using him. And that is where we pick up our conversation with me, Logan, a whole bunch of tape watching, and some analysis for you on the Commanders' newest outside edge player.
Yeah, I mean, I think the role you described is perfect for him. And I think that's exactly what you see on tape. I think that's like when you watch the Buffalo film, like you just pull a clip, pull a game, right? And it has all his plays kind of parsed out, has the down and distance on there. They all say third down for the most part.
Yeah.
So like they were using him in the way that I think the Commanders are going to use him. Like you're looking for a guy who, again, I think he could still play on first and second down, but he's 36 years old. So how many reps do you want him taking in that capacity? And then in a game that's a pass driven league, like how do we affect the passer? And I think he's a guy that can still get that done. You know, I think he had 8 sacks, 7 sacks last year, something like that. I don't remember off the top of my head, but it's not an insignificant number for the amount of snaps that he's actually rushing the quarterback. And so I do think you get a guy who can win a one-on-one, and I think that's important. And I think he understands kind of the nuance of rushing the quarterback still, right? He understands like when the tackle is over-leveraged, when he's not sitting on the line, when he can use that great spin move and get inside. He's still got enough vertical juice to win the edge, and he's got enough length and enough power to kind of bull and get after some people. So I think, again, he's not – like I think about Von Miller when I played against him, which was, you know, 2012, 13, 14, and he was – maybe the best defensive player in the league. He's definitely not that guy anymore, but he still has something to him, right? He's one of the better athletes to play outside linebacker in a long time. And I think that shows up. He has an athletic surplus, and really what you're getting is the pass rushing nuance, right? You're getting a guy who understands how to win multiple situations in a game. He understands, and he kind of seems to make the plays in the big moments, like, which is something that I think
we've talked about that a lot with like the great players, like him, TJ Watt, like these guys just have a knack for doing Aaron Donald famously in the Super Bowl, but also many other times, like the, when you need it, those are the guys that figure out a way to get it done.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think you look at him and you say, man, like this is exactly kind of what the doctor ordered. And I think it's something that I think you and I probably expected to happen. I actually thought this would happen later in training camp, but again, like, it's good that they got it done now so he can be here and kind of, you know, become indoctrinated in the culture. But he brings a guy, and I think about like what you'd get out there, right? You get Deron, Kinlaw, Jerzon, you get Dorrance Armstrong, you get him, and then you get Frankie Louvu as a blitzer. And I think you've got five guys in pass rushing situations that could win on one-on-one. And that's exactly what you need. So, I think a lot of fans are stoked on the name. They should be. He's still a good football player. He's not the guy he was 10 years ago, but who is? And I think he fits kind of a perfect niche for this team at the moment. I expect to see Dietrich Reyes and Cleveland Farrell in on first and second down. And then I expect him to come in and throw his pitch and win some reps and disrupt the quarterback.
Yeah, for sure. I think also when you watch him, I'm excited to see what happens for the other guys too. Like when you compare him to Dante Fowler, like Dante was a bit of a wild man, as we've talked about. There's a lack of discipline to his play. It still can produce at a very high level, but there is a boom or bust nature to the way Dante Fowler played the position. And I think one of the things that stuck out to me about watching some of Miller is like, he looks like he'd be a joy to rush with. Like, he's not going to get wildly out of his lane. Like, there are times that you're like, oh, okay, he's the guy on this rep. And like, he kind of has the freedom to do what he wants. But like, that group in Buffalo rushed pretty well together. They had 20 sacks with him on the field last year. They had six of them were his. But when you go sorting the snap numbers, or you go sorting the snaps in NFL Pro, and it's like, all right, I want Von Miller on the field and I want plays that end in sacks. And there's 20 of them. And a lot of times he is a guy that helps create it for others. You know, it's a stunt and he's eating two and a linebacker loops around. So like Bobby and Frankie, like some of the stuff they could do with them looping around off of Von and the attention he's going to get, like that's good stuff. They kind of shaded to his side and created a one-on-one elsewhere. That guy's able to win. So if you're Deron Payne, you're Johnny Newton, you're Javon Kinlaw, and you're going to be someone rushing next to Von Miller in a way that was more predictable than rushing next to a guy like Dante Fowler, I think that's an exciting element of his game. Like to me, you just see the maturity in it and like, oh yeah, this is a dude who understands how the league works, which is part of what made him great in the first place. But at the age of 36, like that's also how you stay around for so long.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, like I think there is an element of that, and I'd be curious to see how they coach him here and like what they want to get out of him. I think, when you have a piece like this, and again, like Buffalo chose to use him in a very specific way, kind of as one piece of a whole, but I also think he's a guy that could still be your ace if you needed him to. And so I'm curious to see if they deploy him in like a lot of games, or they say, hey man, like go win, like get in a wide nine, go win, and we'll have Deron in a wide three and like let him win the one-on-one. You know what I'm saying? Like, are we just trying to find one-on-ones, or are we trying to rush as four? And when I say trying to rush as four, are we running games, or running a lot of line stunts? Or because again, you still need to, even though you're winning one-on-ones, you need to rush together to keep the quarterback in the pocket, obviously.
Right.
But I think like that'll be interesting to see kind of the direction they go with this. Because last year they kind of had to get to some different stuff because they didn't have a ton of pass rush juice. So I think that's the thing that I'm most curious about, is just like what does this change kind of Joe Witt Jr.'s approach to rushing the quarterback, getting after the quarterback, having this piece here? I think it might. I also think maybe it just is something that adds on, like you kind of keep your same foundational stuff. And then you say, hey, this is the stuff we can do now that Vaughn is here and Dorrance is healthy and all those types of things. So I'm just really curious about it. I like the addition. I like the signing. I think he's going to provide a lot of, especially if they can be better on first and second down, he's going to provide a lot of value. And I think that's where, some of the other moves they've made become really impactful. And we're going to talk about this when we do our defensive line preview. It's like some of those guys, like they're not the biggest names, but if they get you better on first, second down, then he can comes in on third and eight, third and seven, third and nine. And again, like when you know it's a passing down as a pass rusher, you have a lot more juice to you. And I think like that's something that, again, could help potentially maximize this signing even more.
Yeah, well, let's dive into that part, and then we can kind of do the back seven is a own its own section of the defensive preview, and then we'll hit the offense to wrap things up. But if you think of how Von Miller affects the D-line overall, one, this is a guy that's run a pass rush camp for a lot of years. Like, the knowledge that he has should make everyone better. Inside guys, outside guys, like, just having a voice like that in the room, in theory, should be the kind of thing that elevates everyone. Nevertheless, what he brings to you on the field of filling a role that they didn't necessarily have filled. But what does that do you think, to the depth chart and the ability for this D-line to, you know, coalesce into a really good, deep unit? You know, good, is that the right word? Great, that's probably too much, but like, what are the chances versus like, I don't know, man, this kind of gets them to average and we'll pray for the best.
Yeah, I think I like the way you describe that. Does this get them above average? Because last year, I think you could argue, like, based on production, that they were below average a little bit, right? And so, but I do think what you see is kind of an interesting group. And like, we've talked about it a lot over summer, but I think you see a lot of guys who are more specialized than I would have thought, you know, kind of coming in. Like, you know, usually you try to find that three down defensive end, the three down defensive tackle, but now you got a bunch of guys who feel like they're kind of specialty players. Like, it feels like Dietrich Wise, if Golden ends up making the team, and again, like, that's something that's really interesting to talk about, is like, all of a sudden with this addition, like, the defensive line room is incredibly dense. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah, you're like, man, there's a lot of depth here, and everyone kind of has different roles within this depth. So like, I think you get your, like, first and second down group of guys, right? Which to me would be like, you know, Duran, who seems like a three down player, Dietrich, Cleland, Dorrance probably to a certain extent, and then probably Kinlaw over Johnny, but like, we'll see how that kind of that position battle kind of matriculates over the course of training camp. And then I think you do have a specialty guy in Goldman if he does make the team, like we just talked about. So that to me feels like your first and second down group. And then I think you kind of transition into that third down position group where it's like, you get Vaughn, you get Kinlaw, you get Duran, you get Dorrance, and then you get Frankie Louvu in some type of pass rushing situation. And that feels like a completely different group almost in terms of utilization. But that first group needs to do well. And that's the other thing I'm so interested about with regards to training camp, is like, who is in that group? Because right now it feels like Cleland, Dietrich, Dorrance are kind of the guys that I'd use there, but maybe Holmes makes a push and kind of finds a rotational element.
Jalen Holmes is the guy, like, if I was going to highlight someone, considering how he played last year and the way he played, Jalen Holmes feels like he should be in that first and second down group. Like, he was really good as an edge setter last year. Like, he plays hard, he plays physical. Maybe not the most talented guy in the world pass rush wise, but like, he feels like he should be in that group.
And again, like, this is one of those things that's kind of tough because, like, look at the contract values and, like, look at how they kind of, like, he started the season. Did he start on practice squad, or he kind of was like up and down?
I think he did. I think he started on practice squad and then got elevated.
And so do you feel like you could get him to practice squad? And like, that's where, in terms of like 53-man roster projection, like, Dietrich is a guy they kind of sought out. They didn't pay him a ton of money, but they paid him enough, right? We haven't even talked about Jacob Martin in terms of his pass rush upside. He feels like another guy that could be kind of in that third down pass rush group. But I went back and watched some of his stuff with the Bears. Like, he does some nice stuff on first and second down as well. So that to me, this group is really interesting because it really comes down to roles and utilization. And I think Von Miller's addition is kind of this stone in the lake that's causing all these ripple effects, and I think could change the dynamic of how you view this group. So I don't know. It's interesting because I do feel like there's like two teams that need to be made here on the defensive line. One is the group on first and second down, and one is the third down group. And I think Vaughn is, just based on the number he got at signing, you know, $6 million guaranteed, you know, total of $10 million. He feels like the guy that's going to kind of be an anchor of that pass rushing group. But in terms of the other players, I think there's still a lot of competition and a lot of roles that need to be identified, which, again, I think is really interesting and really compelling in terms of something to watch for training camp.
Yeah, Carl Davis, Sheldon Day obviously played really well for guys that kind of came in last year. They're going to fight for some of those interior spots. Martin's the guy, like, if I'm Jacob Martin and I see the Von Miller signing, I go, damn it. Like, he, just because he's the pass rush specialty guy, and he was kind of the only one in that realm. And now, you know, he's going to be competing with Von Miller, but also with Javonte John-Baptiste. Like, Andre Jones Jr., who made the team last year and is still around, even though he was a seventh round pick in Rivera's last year. But like his special teams value is pretty high because he's really fast and runs down and plays hard on teams. So there's some interesting guys. Narelle Pollard had a very nice camp last year. He's still floating around on the back end. So there is, I mean, probably like 14 guys fighting for nine spots. And like, you know, the top seven or eight are probably taken. But I do think this is a very, very interesting group. I also wonder how thin they go at linebacker to create some more space. So we're going to do a 53-man roster projection on the radio show today. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea how that's going to pan out still. Because AKA, I haven't done it yet. We haven't pre-done it. We're going to do it live. That's what we do on the radio, Logan. We do it live. Anything else on the D-line that we want to hit before we get into the back seven?
Yeah, and I think we kind of touched on this already. Just it's... I think there's a lot of solid football players, but it's roles, it's opportunities, and kind of how the staff sees these guys. And I think that's something that is maybe different than ones last year. We were talking about this in the production meeting. It's not like there's like a position battle, but it's like,
right,
who's going to be the starting first down defensive end? Like, that is an interesting kind of conversation because we don't really know. I mean, like, you can assume.
Yeah. But Lawrence is going to be on one side. Who's on the other?
Yeah. And so, like, how does that go? And then who's going to be the nose guard, right? Because I'm assuming Duran's going to play three technique. Is it Kinlaw? Do they kind of flip-flop those roles? Like, that's going to be interesting too. So
that's interesting. You think Duran's going to play three tech? For years, he's been stuck as the one because John was playing the three techs. You think he's going to flip over?
I think if I think about who my best defensive lineman is at the moment, it's probably Duran's in the conversation. And where do you put your most impactful interior defensive player? You put him at three technique, right? And so and that's interesting because I also think that Kinlaw, for an example, is a better three technique than a shade, right? I think Drazon's a better three technique than a shade. And this is something that Dallas kind of ran into for years. You had a bunch of three techniques, but you didn't have a true nose, you know? So like, that's where, you know, Goldman is interesting to me because it's like, he is a true nose, but like, you know, they didn't pay him a ton of money to come in. He wasn't at OTAs. He wasn't at minicamp. Like, he feels like the thing they absolutely have to have in this defense to be good against the run on first, second down. But do they say, hey, we want to be fast. We want to be versatile. We want to be athletic on the interior. And again, those are the decisions that right now you can speculate about, but you don't really get concrete information until you start watching training camp practice. So that to me is why this group is so interesting. It's like, because there's not like battles necessarily, but there's spots open. Who's the nose guard? Who's the other defensive end? Those are going to be interesting position battles because I think it could be Holmes, it could be Dutrick, it could be anybody, right? And then who's going to kind of solidify themselves as that pass rushing subgroup? And like, do you have to keep more guys on the defensive line to get that done? So like, do you keep 10? Do you keep 11 on the defensive line because you want that the kind of the platooning of the groups? And again, when you're doing a roster prediction, these are things you have to consider big time. But I do think it's more interesting than I think a lot of people want to give credit for.
For sure. And then, you know, there was times at last year when like it was Day and Duran, like that was the better combo because like Sheldon Day just did his job as a pro and not going to be an impactful playmaker, but like he'll eat a double team. And so like what kind of combos do those down roster guys have on first and second down, especially first down, to make this all kind of come together and coalesce? All right. Offense and defense preview coming. Let's get to the back seven on the defensive side here on Take Command. All right. If you want that, you can check out Take Command wherever you get your podcasts. When we get back, we wrap up the show with real things real people said into real microphones. It's the Hoffman Show, wrapping up here on the Team 980, the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, and YouTube at the Team 980. And Anthony, we're running out of shows. Let's get right to it. It's time for Real Things. All right, we got two things in Real Things today. You want to start on the funny or end on the funny, Anthony? Do we go heartfelt or funny first?
I think we go heartfelt first.
Damian Lillard's going back to Portland. This is awesome. He should have never left. I'm sure he wishes that he didn't. I don't know that he ever really wanted to, just kind of felt that the organization felt like they had to. I mean, it works out for the Blazers. They got a bunch of draft capital for Dame, but he winds up back there after the buyout in Milwaukee, which was very exciting news to his kids.
They're all old enough to pick up on it now, especially Dame Jr., but I didn't say nothing to him about it until Saturday when I actually signed, and they were with me, and we got back in the car to go home. And I got to a red light, and I just turned around, and my daughter was looking at me, and I told her, and she was like, "Wait, so like, we don't have to get on an airplane to Milwaukee no more?" I was like, "Yeah, like y'all don't gotta get on the plane no more." And she was like, "So you're gonna be at your house in Portland the whole time?" I was like, "Yeah." And she was like, "What?" Like, she was, and then her brothers was kind of listening to that back and forth, and they were all extremely excited. So I saved it for when I knew it was official.
That's awesome. That's really cool. Dame's family's still there. He's kept his house. Like, Portland was where he was going to spend, I assume it's where he retired to. Like, and it's awesome for, I think it's just great because the contract he signed, he can go there, he can rehab in a place that's familiar with people that are familiar. He'll play a year, hopefully not this year, but next. And if he plays really well, he can opt out and go back into free agency, or he can stay and just retire a Blazer. He's got that kind of optionality. It's kind of the rehab special contract. I heard Rob Mahoney call it that the other day. It's a similar deal to what Kyrie signed. It's kind of a 2+1. You get a rehab year, a year, and then you figure it out from there. But considering the family ties for Portland and Dame, like, I absolutely love that. On the opposite end of the spectrum, there was this, Anthony, where's this from again? Michael Beasley talking to someone.
He was on a podcast with.
He's on a podcast with someone. I apologize for
it's
not
from
knowing
CBS
who it is.
Sports, I know.
Okay, from CBS Sports, and had this hilarious quote about a coach that he used to play for.
Toughest defender you've ever faced?
Rick Adelman, Eric Spoelstra, whatever head coach at the time.
Eric Spoelstra is one of the toughest defenders you've ever faced?
Yeah, he never put me in the game. The ex, Spo, I love you. Don't. Spo's my guy. Don't.
I guess that is defending. It's blocking you from playing. Okay.
It is. It's blocking him from scoring. The problem is that Michael Beasley never really was that interested in defending, and that's not a good way to get on the floor for Eric Spoelstra and the Miami Heat.
Yeah.
I don't think
he's one of the most talented dudes. Like, even KD, dude, always says he's probably one of the best scorers he's ever come across.
Him at K-State was nasty.
Nasty.
He was so good. The problem was you got to do a little more at the NBA level. And I think he wasn't always focused on the right stuff. Think he had some other hobbies that perhaps limited his ability to be the best pro that he possibly could. All right. That's our show for today. Appreciate everyone listening as always. I will be back next Friday. So you definitely want to tune in then. Definitely going to want to tune in next Friday. The return of your boy. Until then, Doc Walker, Linnell Willingham have you covered, Anthony, of course, as well. Y'all take good care of them. They'll take good care of you. Enjoy Commander's Camp. I'll be following from afar. I will be on Take Command, so catch you there. Until then, be well.